How many U.S. Supreme Court justices are there? That's just one of the civics or citizenship questions Wisconsin high school seniors in spring 2017 may have to answer to get those diplomas. To talk about the new civics test requirement to graduate, thanks to Tony Evers, Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction, and for the record, there are 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices. Tony, welcome back to Wisconsin Eye.
Steve, it's great to be here. I'm glad you knew
that answer.
Okay, thank you. I'm assuming I did. And for the record, how many Wisconsin Supreme Court justices?
There's 7.
Yes, we both got it right. Okay.
Except when some of them recuse themselves.
Don't participate. But anyway, there's 9 U.S. and 7. How do you feel about this test? It was loaded into the state budget, signed into law. Governor Walker didn't touch it with a veto. But let's be clear, it begins for the class of 2017, not next year. But
correct.
Go ahead, excuse me.
Yeah, we opposed this when it was, I think it went to the Government Affairs Committee several months ago. And for several reasons. One is a more basic issue is that we've done focus groups this summer with hundreds of teachers across the state on a whole plethora of assessment issues. And the hue and cry that drowns most everything out is the fact that teachers and principals across the state are concerned that we do too much testing. Some of it's state, some of it's local, but in general, I think we've crossed the tipping point. So this adds one more piece to the puzzle. In addition, because our state, at the state level, this is purely a locally administered, record keeping, all that, we have nothing to do with it. So it's another kind of administrative burden on local school districts when revenue is a bit on the scarce side. And probably biggest thing is, what does it accomplish? If you know those numbers of the Supreme Court, is that more important than understanding what some of the decisions are done locally at the national level? I think not. And I think it's there's an assumption here that we don't teach civics much anymore. And I don't agree with that. I think we do. Maybe not as much as we have in the past because we've had to focus on literacy and mathematics and things like that. But I think there's still a good core of citizenship and civics education taking place in the state. So I'm not sure what this accomplishes except for another burden and something to talk about.
You said you've held focus groups with teachers around the state based on testing. Did this new mandate for a civics test come up, sir?
We contracted out the focus group work, and so I don't know the answer to that question. They were working on our behalf. But just a general concept of another test is enough to take most people's breath away. But it's, legislators do what they need to do. They're elected officials, too, and we have to honor that. We don't have to agree with it, but we have to honor their role in the process, too. So local districts will move ahead.
You said that these civics issues are being taught in Wisconsin schools. Which grade? 9, 10, 11, 12? Because this test will have to be given only to seniors, as you're aware.
I'd say there's concepts dealt with in middle school, even elementary school, but I'd say early high school is the area. So if this is a test for seniors, it's a test that people should be able to do okay on. So I'm not sure what purpose it serves going forward.
Did you ask the governor to veto it?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's based on, I just went through the language with with one of the analysts at the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. And it says that the questions have to be identical to the test for those that want to be citizens, which is developed by the federal agency, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. So that speaks to DPI can't touch to it, local districts can't add to it.
No. Well, I suppose they can, but the 60% passing grade that's in state law would have to be on these questions. I suppose a district could add some other ones, but they wouldn't be part of the graduation requirement.
Well, I was just thinking if the Belmont School District might be proud of the fact to add a question, where was the first Wisconsin state capital located in Belmont, Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Or Ripon might ask a question, what is considered the birthplace of the Republican Party?
Yes. Yeah, they could. But the requirements in the law are specifically to the tests that people take when they get a naturalized citizenship.
What about having to get 60% right to pass? Isn't 60% on other grades an F?
Usually, but that's just it. The purpose of this test is an unknown. And also, one thing that confuses me, frankly, and is a bit concerning, is that kids with special needs, they take it, but it doesn't count for anything.
That's true.
Well, frankly, over the years, we've expected high standards and high expectations for kids with disabilities as any other kids. And so now we're kind of stepping away from that. I don't know. It was clearly something that was important to the legislature, and the governor thought it was important enough, and here we go.
Okay. Well, let's walk through five questions, five actual questions from the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. First question, what does the Constitution do? Now, Tony, you know these were developed by the federal government.
Yeah.
So let's look at some potential answers. Sets up the government, defines the government, protects the basic rights of Americans. Which answer is more right than wrong?
Well, if I had to guess, it would be C,
protecting
basic rights. But in general, you could say it kind of sets up the government. For example, the Constitution says that if the Constitution doesn't mention or specifically give the federal government rights, it goes to the state. And education is a good example. The Constitution really doesn't deal with it. Therefore, it's always been believed to be a state issue. So does it help set up the government? To some extent, yes. But I'd say if you had to kind of winnow through all this, C would probably be the one that I would answer. Am I right?
I don't know. but here's my question. Would A and B be wrong? If I asked as a parent to see the results of my kid's new civics or citizenship test, first of all, does a parent have a right to see that?
The test results, I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure.
For my student?
Right.
My Johnny or Sally?
Right.
Okay, and if my student got a 58 and I'm trying to get she or he to 60, would I have an argument to argue that A and B are both right in this first question?
I think so, but maybe, yes, if I was a parent in that situation or a kid in that situation, I would use as one of the examples I just talked about is the fact that the Constitution doesn't specifically give the federal government ability to set education policy. And is that something that could be considered setting up the government or defining government?
Right.
Yes.
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 Okay. So you asked if C is right. I don't know, because I do have a copy of the actual test, U.S. citizenship, but doesn't give me the answers.
Well,
so
there you go.
Question two. Who is one of your state's U.S. senators now? Okay, potential. Ron Johnson, Donald Trump, Scott Walker, Joe Biden, Tammy Baldwin. My question is...
It's not Trump.
The presidential candidate, Donald Trump, one of 17. Scott Walker's a governor, one of 17.
Yeah.
Joe Biden is the vice president of the United States. The other two, of course, are our U.S. senators.
Right.
How valid a question is this?
I think you should know the names of them, but is that going to help you understand?
Should high school seniors know when most voters don't?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would hope they would, but I would hope more so they would understand what a senator does.
Yes.
And frankly, where Senator Johnson and Senator Baldwin stand on various issues so that when they are of age to vote, that they can make a good choice as to who they vote for in those two races. So naming them, it makes good theater if people don't know of them. But I think it's more important for the people to know where they stand on issues, what the senator does, that sort of thing. And the names aren't extraordinarily important.
So if you were drafting this test, you wouldn't put this question on?
I wouldn't do that, no.
Another question here that's not here is, what does a U.S. senator represent? And the answer is the entire state.
Correct.
So is that more important than to know the name, Ron Johnson, Tammy Baldwin?
For sure, yes. I think that's very important to know because, we're facing, the House of Representatives do represent various parts of the state. The senators, even though there's two of them, they share that responsibility. I think that's an important thing to know, absolutely.
So there are, there are 435 members of the U.S. House of Representatives, right?
Correct.
And then 100 senators?
Correct.
How am I doing?
That's 535 altogether.
So my answer is okay so far?
Yep.
But should Wisconsin high school seniors know who their local member of the U.S. House is? We're in the 2nd District. That's Mark Pocan?
Yeah, one would hope, but again, it's the concept is, I mean, first of all, if you don't deal with Mark Pocan on a regular basis, either personally or in any other way, odds are you're going to forget his name until next election. But it's more important to know how to access that person, where what committees they're on, what positions they're taking, that sort of thing. As an elected official, I'd like people to know my name. It's important for being elected. But the fact of the matter is, it's more important to know where I stand on issues, mm-hmm. and what the state superintendent does, and what authority he or she has or doesn't have, and you know, those are the things that really count.
Okay. All right, let's go to question three, please, sir.
Okay.
Now this gets to the state and federalism issue that you alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
Under our Constitution, some powers belong to the federal government. What is one power of the federal government? A, print money, declare war, create an army, make treaties. Tony, you got to help me on this one.
You could run the table here.
Well, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it fair to argue that the federal government does all of these things?
Yes. Yes.
Then all of the above is an answer.
So therefore, getting to 60% should be relatively easy. But also, it sends the wrong message.
Please, elaborate.
And so if I was a 17-year-old, I'd be looking, okay, one of these is right. So I'll go with D, to make treaties. And in my mind now...
Do you think because they've heard of the Iran nuclear debate?
Yeah.
Right.
For an example.
Okay,
sure.
Excuse me.
Yeah, but then one could assume then that the other three are incorrect. And I think that's probably a pretty poor position to be in.
Well, there's no doubt about printing money. There's no doubt about declaring war, because we debate that every few years.
Right.
Create an army? I don't know the answer. Is that solely within the province of our federal government,
yeah,
sir?
Well, it certainly isn't state government. So,
no, that's true.
Yeah, so I would say yes, that's true.
But your point is you could argue that all of these.
I believe so.
And the way the question is worded, which comes, again, from a federal agency, what is one power? So that would force a 17-year-old to just pick one.
Yeah, right, and possibly assume that the other three are incorrect.
Wow, okay. Question four. Now let's get to state power. Under our Constitution, some powers belong to the state. What is one power of the states? You kind of alluded to this earlier.
Yeah, look at
provide
that.
Schooling and education, provide protection, police, provide safety, fire departments. Get, now this is that's the way the federal agency worded it. I would argue that it should be issue a driver's license, approve zoning and land use. Mr. Superintendent, what's the right answers here?
It looks to me like it's A through E. I know
all of the above?
Yeah, I mean, clearly I talked about before, education is a primary responsibility of the state. Police forces across the state do not report to the federal government in any kind of hierarchical way. Same with fire departments. We tax for fire and police at a local level. Getting a driver's license, obviously, and land use. I would say they all are.
What about E? Isn't that a function of local governments?
Yeah.
Towns, cities, village.
I'm sorry. I was thinking.
This is one power of the states.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. State. Yes.
Okay. So which is...
I'm sorry. I thought it was non-federal.
Well, let's go back through them again. Which of these is exclusively the power of state governments?
Exclusively?
Yep.
Schooling?
Yep.
Well, schooling is shared with local government.
Yeah.
Police protection. Yes, that's a local issue, but we have a state patrol in this state, as most states have, so that's a state organization. Fire departments, I believe that would be fair to say that is a local only.
Okay.
Getting a driver's license, clearly a state. And zoning and land use is primarily local, but as you've seen even with this last budget, or maybe as a previous budget, the shoreland zoning.
Oh, yes. So shoreland zoning was preempted.
Was preempted by
the Joint Finance Committee.
Right. So, yes and yes. I guess it's part both.
Here's my question. As a former classroom teacher, former district superintendent, how would you grade this answer?
How would I grade it? I'd be tempted to, which is one power of the states? Probably driver's license. I know of no local area that does their own driver's license.
That's a good answer. There are four.
It's way too complex, though.
You and I didn't draft these.
Yeah,
a federal agency did.
No kidding.
There are four amendments to the Constitution about who can vote. Describe one of them. Citizens 18 and older. You don't have to pay. For example, you don't have to pay a poll tax to vote. Any citizen can vote. Women and men can vote. A male citizen of any race can vote. I'm confused. What's the right answer?
I'd have to guess on this one.
You would have to guess.
Yeah, there are four amendments to the Constitution about who can vote. Describe one of them. I think D is not one of them because I think the Constitution gave male citizens, no, not of any race. No, mm-hmm. That's an amendment. Who can vote? Women and men can vote. That's also an amendment. Poll tax was part of the civil rights election amendment. 18 year older, that may not be. That might be in the Constitution. That's what I'm struggling with.
I'm a little bit worried that the superintendent of public instruction has trouble answering question number five. What's the larger takeaway?
Well, the larger takeaway is answering questions like this aren't necessarily going to have people have a deeper understanding of civics. In fact, I was with a university professor on a wholly different thing the other day, and she was talking. We were talking about politics in general, and we talked about civics tests, and she just had a conniption.
Her head exploded?
Yes, and indicating that we're going to be taking our time kind of analyzing some of these questions that aren't very important, and the fact of the matter is we really need to make sure that kids get a deeper learning of being a citizen of the state and in their local government and at the national level. And this is not going to drive that discussion.
Okay. My larger question, so just a few nuts and bolts on this test. How do you expect Wisconsin teachers? First of all, does this apply to public and private schools?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And first time ever that I recall that a private school has had a graduation requirement put on by the state of Wisconsin.
Wow. We have set a precedent here.
Yes.
How do you expect Wisconsin teachers to, I'm going to use this phrase, teach to the test, a controversial phrase?
Well, yeah, that is controversial. There's lots of online, and I probably should have taken it, I could answer this question, that question five better, but there's all sorts of online tools to help people prepare for this test, and you know, kids can memorize answers by taking the practice test and so on and so forth. Is that high-level learning? God forbid. It's not. I know it's not. So, yes, that's the way it will be taught to the test, hopefully, and I believe reasonably. This will be dealt with in some social studies class, and that good teachers that we have out there in social studies will spend some time making sure the kids can graduate, answer these questions, answer the simple ones, but also continue to do the great job they do with having a broader and deeper understanding of civics and citizenship.
When they focus on getting their students to pass this test, what do you think will they not be teaching?
Deeper understanding of civics.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's a trade-off. There's only 24 hours in a day. Legislature didn't increase that this session. So there's a minimal amount of time to begin with, and this will take time because it's something they have to have in order to graduate. I think there's going to be all sorts of options out that can be done.
That was one of my questions. Yeah. Could a parent opt out, have their student opt out of this test?
I think they probably could, but there's a requirement that they take it to graduate.
There is.
Yeah.
And I read that as kind of a mandate that there's no opt-out.
Right. I don't think the opt-out language that has been considered excludes this, but I'm not sure about that.
Does DPI have to draft rules just on this very subject, whether parents can opt out?
This particular test?
Yes.
To my knowledge, we have no authority to do anything under this test. This is a mandate from the federal from the state government to the local school districts. They administer it, they grade it, they do whatever they want to with it, but it is a requirement to pass 60% of the questions in order to graduate.
Do the results even have to be passed on to DPI?
No.
They do not?
No. So I have no idea how we will get any kind of feeling for the statewide how kids do statewide, because we do not have that information.
Do you actually expect some members of the class of 2017 to not graduate because they have failed this test?
Yeah.
You do?
Sure. There'll be some. I mean, whether it's a language issue, and I know that you can pick, you can get it taken in your native language. But, yeah, I think there'll be some. I mean, kids will be absent. There's all sorts of possible scenarios by which, small numbers but may not graduate.
Do you expect the test to be given in oral or purely in written way?
And primarily written, primarily online. Yeah, it'd be my guess. I mean, it already exists online, so somehow teachers have to watch it and verify the answers. Clearly, this is not soup yet at the local level. They haven't thought about it, I'm sure, preparing for the school year. But I'm confident that our school districts will be able to meet this requirement as the legislature laid out. Doesn't mean that I feel that it has any greater value as a result of that. People like to be compliant with the law.
If you were teaching the seniors in the class of 2017, and you really want them to pass this test, how would you teach it?
To pass the test?
Yes.
I'd have them do the practice test and memorize answers.
So you would have them go through this, the U.S. test?
Right.
Okay.
Would I feel like this is great instruction? No. But am I going to stand in the way of any kid graduating because of that? I would put time in to make sure that students could answer these questions, even if it meant that they're memorizing answers and they're regurgitating them.
Would you teach this in the final days of when high school seniors are so restless and they just want out of there? Or would you start early?
I would try to weave it into some logical place in the curriculum to give it some context. I'm not sure that's going to be the easiest thing to do, though.
Would you give it early in the school year so they're aware that by the end of that school year they have to pass it?
Absolutely. As early as I can to make it have it make some context with what we're doing in the class, so that if kids fail, they can try and try and try again. And that's set up to allow a minimum number of kids not graduating as a result. Mm-hmm. But I also believe that if you take it four or five times and you're trying to memorize the answers, not only on the teacher's point of view, on the kids, what exactly have they learned? Have they suddenly become a better understanding of our Constitution and the decisions our Supreme Courts make?
And the role of federal and state governments.
The role of governments, if they can tell who one of the senators are in Wisconsin. It's a time thing, but it's also a concern of mine that this bill, even though it did have a hearing in the government affairs, I don't know of any educator that testified for it, to my knowledge. And, you know, there's a national group that's pushing this, and this is part of a national movement, and I recognize that. But once again, educators are kind of left on the outside.
So we would be, what, the sixth or seventh state to adopt this?
I think. That sounds about right.
Well, given the achievement gap issues, given the dropout rate that it's higher among minorities, do you think it would discriminate against poor and minority high school seniors in Wisconsin?
It could. It could. Proof is in the pudding, but achievement gaps are achievement gaps, and if there is an achievement gap in English language arts and reading, having a multiple choice test like this, I don't think is going to be very helpful for someone that's struggling.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Can we talk about a couple other issues?
Sure.
Let's talk about the Badger exam, which was kind of put, according to the Journal Sentinel story, in limbo.
Mm-hmm.
But now DPI has asked, we've been talking about testing.
Mm-hmm.
The Badger exam is totally separate from the civics test or citizenship test.
Correct.
So we're talking about the test administered to who that covers what?
Grades 3 through 8 is the Badger test and in English language arts and mathematics. And we've always had that test. Those grades tested at least for several years. So this was another iteration of tests. We got rid of the tests we were having because...
The Wisconsin Knowledge and Concepts
exam. You're very good.
I just looked it up. I cheated. Go ahead.
You could put that on the citizenship test.
So
you know the answer. We did the test, and the legislature and the governor agreed. Well, actually, the governor initiated the proposal to get rid of the Smarter Balance test.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're in the process of, first of all, after it got going, the Smarter Balance test had a virtual error-free run. 98.5% of the kids that were supposed to take it took it. It had very few problems rolling it out once we got it started. And so I feel very good about it. And once we get the results back totally in our system, I think our results will be pretty good. And I think the information will be good for school districts across the state. That aside, I accept that as the law of Wisconsin, that test is now banned. And so we went out for bid on another test, and that's in the process of procurement with the Department of Administration. And I assume we will have a new test in place or named a new test sometime in August or September.
So you expect a new test to be available for the students starting the school year here in a few weeks?
Yes. I mean, it'll be spring testing, but it'll be in place, the vendor name by that time.
Okay. Yeah. Then talk about school's going to start here in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. Biggest change as a result of the budget for our public schools or for K-12 generally?
Well, again, we continue to be the center of quite a bit of attention. And I'd say even though the legislature was able to bump it up to 0% increase from where it was, mm-hmm. resources are still a problem. There's no question about that. And so going forward, even though we've made some good strides, both educationally and in other arenas in the state, it's just going to be harder and harder to deal with the minimum amount of resources that we have. Costs are going up, and actually teachers in some places, it's like the Wild West, getting outbidding each other. And so I think resources are a main issue going forward. There's all sorts of other issues that surround that, the expansion of vouchers statewide.
Can we talk about expansion of vouchers?
Was
it a good thing that they put a 1% limit? No public district could lose more than 1%?
Sure, it's good, but that can disappear at any time. And I fully expect it to be. I mean,
are you saying in the next session
you just expect
that 1% to be struck?
Sure.
Erased.
I expect it at any point in time, frankly. And not to be critical, because the folks that are making these decisions, the governor and the majority, have been very transparent from the get-go around vouchers in this state. So it's not that I'm arguing that it's a sneak attack. It's just the fact that that's a priority of theirs, and they're making that priority happen. That's what legislators and politicians do. So that's an issue, but overall resources, but kind of going forward long-term, what I'm most concerned about is the teaching force in the state. And the fact of the matter is, even though we want to believe that we're treating teachers fairly, but they're part of all this political hubbub that goes around public education. And as a result, I think we're losing all sorts of good people out of the profession, and clearly the people entering the profession are dwindling. If I was a school district up north and I was trying to hire somebody, within a few years, if not already, they're having a hard time finding anybody to fill some positions. And we've been through that before when anybody that can breathe taught, so to speak, mm-hmm. in the early 60s and the 50s where there were no teachers, lots of kids. We can't have that happen. We just cannot have that happen. And so what I'm hoping is that even though people still have interesting proposals to lob at us in public education,
right,
that they keep the rhetoric around teachers to a minimum.
Yeah.
We cannot have 60,000 people that are working in our schools be the butt of really harsh rhetoric. It just doesn't work. That's a major concern. Is that a money issue? Yeah, but it's a real issue for people that are working in our schools. We have to cut the crap.
And then maybe final question for you. The original proposal in who can teach in our K-12 schools, joint finance adopted a very wide open, and then it was tightened down.
Right.
Are you satisfied that it was tightened down?
Well, certainly the most egregious pieces were taken out. The one, for example, having a high school dropout be able to teach high school. I mean, there are some things that most people have a visceral reaction to, and that's one of them. So, yes, I think they got rid of some extraordinarily difficult pieces, but there are still some that I think are problematic, and you know they're allowing much larger leeway on getting career and especially tech ed teachers. Well, that having a little more flexibility is fine, but any tech ed teacher can walk out of public schools and into the private sector and probably double their pay. So this is more of it's not about making it easier to become a teacher. It's about making it more reasonable to be a teacher, and that includes pay. And then the other one that's a bit disconcerting to me is that anybody that has a license from any other state, mm-hmm. they've taught for a year, they automatically get one here. That's a little loose for me. I'm not at all in favor of that, and there's too much mischief that can happen, and we're precluded from adding any other requirements to that. Well, in Wisconsin, we have Act 31 put in place a long time ago, where our teachers have to be prepared and understanding the sovereign rights of our tribes in the Wisconsin and be able to teach around that. Well, none of these people from the other 49 states are required from that to do that. I can't believe our tribes are going to stand still to having teachers in our state that aren't prepared in that. We cannot, under the present law, put that requirement in place on these people from 49 other states. It's a problem. Again, I respect legislators' ability to make laws. That's what they're hired to do, and the governor to propose them. But when we have to disagree, we have to make that disagreement obvious.
Okay, and then the civics and citizenship test that will determine whether the class of 2017 graduates, it's a purely a local issue. DPI doesn't have anything to do with it?
Correct.
Okay. Yep. Tony Evers, Superintendent of Public Instruction, thanks for talking about that and other issues, and I hope we have a great school year opening
great.
Here.
It soon. Will be, absolutely.
Thank you.
You bet.